This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Proverbs. And now, here's Pastor Sandy as he teaches through the book of Proverbs, chapters 29 through 31.
There are three things which are too wonderful for me, yes, four, which I do not understand. The way of an eagle in the air, the way of a serpent on a rock, the way of a ship in the midst of the sea, and the way of a man with a virgin. An eagle soaring, a snake slithering, a ship sailing, and a couple sparking are scenes of mystery and marvel and majesty. Think of that last line, the way of a man with a virgin. Do you recall your first love, your first kiss? Do you remember how you dreamed of this person? And when you were around them, your heart literally beat out of your chest. I mean, a mother begs her son to take a bath for 3 years. Suddenly he gets interested in girls, and now he's showering and he's fluffing his hair 3 times a day. I mean, what is it about the sexes that cause us to react in that kind of a way? It stirs our emotions, that stirs up our hormones and our passions. And it's amazing that God has designed us and has designed life to be so pleasurable and beautiful on the one hand and yet so astonishing and baffling on the other hand. He has other illustrations here. A huge eagle you would have a hard time picking up suddenly becomes weightless on the wings of the wind. How mysterious is that? A snake with no legs moves quicker than its prey. That's a mystery. A ship with a heavy cargo refuses to sink, but instead glides across the surface of the water. All these things prove that life is this beautiful mystery that God has created for us to explore. In contrast, though, to a man with a virgin, verse 20 gives us a different picture. This is the way of an adulterous woman. She eats and wipes her mouth and says, "I have done no wickedness." She denies that she's even sinned. How can people who were once so innocent become so calloused? As Agur observes, life is both amazing in its beauty and in its ugliness. He says, for three things the earth is perturbed. Yes, for four, it cannot bear up. And here Agur reflects on life's irritations. And boy, life is full of irritations. Here's the first one that frustrates him. A servant when he reigns. In other words, this is authority without character. Authority without character. You know, a man who's been a servant, he's used to taking orders. Suddenly, he's now giving those orders. And if he doesn't learn to handle authority, he'll misuse and he'll abuse his power. This becomes an irritation and a frustration. Here's another of life's frustrations. A fool when he is filled with food. This is wealth without work. You know, a man inherits some money, you know, or he's given money by his father. Oh, this fool, he can eat all right, but his job is not high on his list of priorities. In other words, he's good at eating off another man's table. Hey, you will never maintain prosperity without knowing what it took to obtain prosperity. The next irritation he mentions is a hateful woman when she is married. This is relationship without responsibility. Here's a gal who goes out of her way to catch a husband. She's nice and she's thoughtful and she's caring. It's all about her man until after the wedding. Now all the responsibility rests on him. Here's a woman who wants a happy home, but she's a hateful wife. It's frustrating. The final embarrassment or frustration he mentions is a maidservant who succeeds her mistress. This is promotion without preparation. Here's a woman who suddenly goes from washing dishes to hosting parties. She's thrust into a position that requires some charm and some culture, but she's never been trained. The maidservant is ill-equipped. She's eager, she's enthusiastic, but she's oblivious to the issues and to the rules of the game. Once again, this is a frustration, promotion without preparation. Verse 24, there are four things which are little on the earth, but they are exceedingly wise. And here the author turns to the animal kingdom. Now, if this Agur, or the collector, was actually Solomon, it would be consistent with his resume. In 1 Kings chapter 4, we're told Solomon spoke 3,000 proverbs, and his songs were 1,005. Also, he spoke of trees. He spoke of animals, of birds, of creeping things, and of fish. And men of all nations came to hear the wisdom of Solomon. Evidently, King Solomon was an expert in zoology. And so he would be equipped and have the knowledge to point to these animals and the lessons that they teach. Here he points to little creatures who are extremely wise. The ants are a people not strong, yet they prepare their food in the summer. You know, ants are wise enough to store up food for a rainy day. They mooch off summer picnics so they'll have plenty to eat on Christmas Day. There's a lesson we can learn there about storing up, about having some savings, about putting some away for when we need it. Then he mentions the rock badgers are a feeble folk, yet they make their homes in the crags. Rock badgers are also known as coonies or hyraks. And today, these little rock badgers are all over Israel. They're fat, they're furry, they're cute, they're cuddly. They're slightly larger than a chipmunk. But the rock badgers, you see, are extremely vulnerable to predators. This is why they survive by hiding in the rocky, hard-to-reach places. David, in some ways, was like a rock badger. You remember what he wrote, Psalm 61, verse 2? He says, "When my heart is overwhelmed, lead me to the rock that is higher than I, for you have been a shelter for me and a strong tower from the enemy." When you think about it, we too are vulnerable to dangers and to hurts and predators. That's why we need to run and take shelter in Jesus, in our rock. Here's another lesson from a little thing. The locusts have no king, yet they all advance in ranks. Locusts don't need a king to enforce submission and cooperation. They know the value of organization intuitively. The locust intrinsically understands rank. He knows his place. The locusts all work together to accomplish their goals. Wow, how we can learn a lesson, how we could get organized, and how we can find our place in the body of Christ. And then finally, the spider skillfully grasps with his hands, and it is in king's palaces. A spider squirts adhesive that allows him to attach himself to walls and ceilings. He knows how to hang on and persevere. He joins this list of little creatures that teach big lessons. Well, verse 29. There are three things which are majestic in pace. Yes, four which are stately in walk. A lion, which is mighty among beasts and does not turn away from any. A greyhound, a male goat also, and a king whose troops are with him. Now, Ephesians 4 instructs Christians to walk in a manner worthy of our calling. You remember that passage? Our position as a child of God is a gift of grace. We do nothing to earn it or deserve it. But once we receive it, we are expected to walk in a manner worthy of our calling. You can do nothing to become a Christian, but once you become a Christian, you need to act like it. And here we're given some insight into how to adopt a godly walk. First, you need the stride of a lion. You need to be bold and courageous and fearless. Second, you need to run like a greyhound. You need to be quick to obey and do good. Third, you need to stand like a goat. You need to be steady and reliable and avoid slip-ups. Go home tonight and tell your spouse that, "Honey, I need you to be more like a goat." And then fourth, you need to march like a king with his troops. You need to be confident and you need to be full of faith. Hey, put it all together and you got a new dance, the believer shuffle. A lion's stride, a hound dog's run, a goat's crouch, and a king's march. Verse 32 warns us, "If you have been foolish in exalting yourself, or if you have devised evil, put your hand on your mouth." If you've been boasting or bucking God's will, man, you need to shut up and repent. Can he say it any clearer? He says, "For as the churning of milk produces butter, and wringing the nose produces blood, So the forcing of wrath produces strife. Apparently, you can learn a spiritual lesson even from a bloody nose. Chapter 31. The words of King Lemuel, the utterance which his mother taught him. Now, the Old Testament records the kings of Israel and Judah, and Lemuel does not appear in any of the lists. Jewish sources identify Lemuel with Solomon. Apparently, it was his mother's pet name for him. If King Lemuel was Solomon, this makes for a fascinating scenario. For remember, Solomon's mother was the infamous Bathsheba, the bathing beauty that became David's partner in adultery and murder. What makes this provocative is that Bathsheba then would be the author of the passage on the virtuous woman. She's the one writing to King Lemuel. Perhaps in the years after she had thrown away her virtue, she learned to appreciate and admire its importance in a woman's life. It's just interesting, the ironies here, to me, they're amazing. Now she speaks in verse 2, "What, my son, and what, son of my womb, and what, son of my vows?" By the way, Lemuel means devoted to the Lord. Here's Bathsheba's advice to her son, verse 3, "Do not give your strength to women, nor your ways to that which destroys kings." Wow. Who better than Bathsheba to speak on this subject? Her husband David had put his lust for a woman ahead of his love for God, and it nearly brought down his kingdom. And she was a party to this disaster. And she's warning her son not to give your strength to women. Guard your heart, my son. Understand, adultery is never worth the price. You're swapping a few moments of pleasure for years and years of pain. Don't give your strength to a woman. Remain strong in the Lord. Pursue and seek after God. You know, sadly, Solomon wasn't listening to this advice. His downfall was the same as his dad. He multiplied wives, and he married pagan women. And it was actually out of Solomon's harem that idolatry gained a foothold in Judah. Well, she continues, "It is not for kings, O Lemuel, it is not for kings to drink wine, nor for princes intoxicating drink, lest they drink and forget the law and pervert the justice of all the afflicted." In other words, alcohol is not for people in positions of authority and leadership. You know, a king can be called on in a moment's notice to make a decision of national importance. The country can't risk its leader being a little tipsy, or his mind being fuzzy. That said, with all the cocktail parties in Washington, D.C., and now all the beer guzzling over at the White House, no wonder we're in such a wreck. This is also why the New Testament makes alcohol off limits to pastors. Pastors, too, are in a position of leadership and have to make instant judgments and decisions. How would you like to call your pastor one night and need some counsel and find that he's drunk? Or he's suffering from a hangover? That's why pastors are not to be given to wine. We're told, "Give strong drink to him who is perishing, and wine to those who are bitter of heart. Let him drink and forget his poverty and remember his misery no more." Here's the only good use for alcohol. It's a great anesthetic. It dulls the pain and it causes pain. That's about all it's good for right there. Verse 8, "Open your mouth for the speechless, in the cause of all who are appointed to die." If ever there was a verse commanding us to speak out against abortion, this is it. To speak for unborn life, this is it. Every year, millions of unborn babies are appointed to die, and none of them are able to speak for themselves. So you open your mouth for the speechless in the cause of those appointed to die. But that's not all. He goes on, "Open your mouth, judge righteously, and plead the cause of the poor and needy." You see, abortion is not the only social issue that should concern us. Christians should also speak out against poverty and injustice. This is why it's naive to equate God's agenda with the Republican Party. You know, I'm glad that the Republican platform is pro-life. But on issues like justice and poverty, it could be that at times Democrats have more of a godly perspective. You know, personally, I'm neither Republican nor Democrat. I'm a Christian. And I suppose politically I'm probably independent. But rather than voting along party lines, I always want to remain free to cast a biblically informed vote, a godly vote, not just a vote along party lines. Well, verse 10, here it is. We've been waiting for her. We've been looking for her. Here she is, not Miss America. Better than that, the virtuous woman. Verse 10 begins, who can find a virtuous wife? Now, throughout the Proverbs, we've been warned about the perverse woman. We've been warned about the contentious woman. It's good to know that there's an alternative, isn't there? There are women who love God and know how to love a husband and raise a family. They're not controlled by worldly fads and fashions. They're not addicted to comfort and conveniences. They control their tongue and they reserve their passions. They're gracious and they're kind, even at home. There are some virtuous women in this world. You know, for single men, I wish I could say that the market was glutted with virtuous women. But that's really not true. Not in Solomon's day and not in our day today. You know, even the writer of Proverbs admits, for her worth is far above rubies. In other words, a virtuous woman is a rarity. She's like a precious jewel. This makes her extremely valuable. I was always told, if ever I found a woman described in Proverbs 31, that I should marry her immediately. And when I found her, I did exactly that. But here's the good news. I don't think she was the last. And so if you're single, pray and look. And the next few verses will describe what you should be on the lookout for. It's interesting, in the original Hebrew, these last 22 verses form an acrostic. There are 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet, and each of these verses begins with a succeeding letter of the alphabet. In other words, Bathsheba is wanting Solomon to memorize this description so that when he sees her, he'll know this is the woman for him. Verse 11. The heart of her husband safely trusts her, so he will have no lack of gain. You need to find a woman you're not worried when she goes to the store with the Visa card. Somebody you can trust. You know, the man who married to the virtuous woman, he and his wife are on the same page. She voices her opinion, but she submits to his leadership. There's no competition in their relationship. She does him good and not evil all the days of her life. Notice her commitment to her husband is for life. She's a lifelong blessing. She seeks wool and flax and willingly works with her hands. In other words, she's got a sewing machine. And she catches the specials at Cloth World. And she even makes clothes for her kids. She doesn't even know what the latest designer labels are called. She does this herself. Verse 14, she is like the merchant ships. She brings her food from afar. Watch her pull into the driveway with the groceries. Her boat is full of provisions from that distant land called Kroger. She also rises while it is yet night and provides food for her household and a portion for her maidservants. She's up before daybreak packing lunches for her kids to take to school, getting them snacks in the middle of the night. She considers a field and buys it. From her profit, she plants a vineyard. She's even got a few tomato plants she keeps up just so the family can have fresh tomatoes from time to time. Verse 17, she girds herself with strength and strengthens her arms. A couple of times a week, she's down at the fitness center. She's doing the aerobics. You know, she's firming up. She perceives that her merchandise is good, and her lamp does not go out by night. She's up late at night, clipping out coupons or surfing the internet, looking for the latest deals. She's trying to stretch the funds. She stretches out her hands to the distaff, and her hands hold the spindle. In other words, she's not too proud to even wear her own homemade outfit. You know, she'll work and she'll sew her own outfit if need be. Verse 20, she extends her hand to the poor. Yes, she reaches out her hands to the needy. Now check her out. She's up to her eyeballs in taking care of her family, but she's not too busy to come up to the church and help Marvin with the disciples' dinner on Thursday night. I mean, she's full of compassion, this woman, not just for her own family, but for others as well, for the poor around her. She's not afraid of snow for her household, for all her household is clothed with scarlet. Notice she keeps good tires on the car just in case it snows. And while she watches television, her reality shows and all, she knits little scarves for her family to wear when it gets cold. She makes tapestry for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. Her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. This woman makes her husband the envy of every man. They gawk and they talk and they wish they had a wife as good and godly as his bride. She makes linen garments and sells them and supplies sashes for the merchants. Now, on top of everything else she does, this virtuous woman has a part-time job that she works to bring some money home to help her hubby pay the bills. She's industrious. She's opened up a side business here. She's got a little cottage industry that she's running. She even deals with the merchants in town to sell her wares. She's adding to the family budget, putting a little money in the kitty, you know, to help make ends meet. And here's where we need some balance. For we often point to passages where that teach us that the wife's focus is homeward. And indeed it should be. Just as a man's work should be his orientation. But if that doesn't mean that the husband can't help with housework, would anybody say the husband can't help with housework? If it doesn't mean that, then it doesn't mean that a wife can't make a little money and help with the finances. And so here the virtuous wife, she finds a way to help with the family's income. Verse 25, strength and honor are her clothing. She shall rejoice in time to come. She's not a complainer. She has an optimistic view of the future. She rejoices in time to come. She opens her mouth with wisdom, and on her tongue is the law of kindness. Notice this. Her kids and even her husband seek her out for advice and for counsel. She watches over the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. She has no idea that Oprah is even on TV. She doesn't even know what a soap opera is. Verse 28. Her children rise up and call her blessed. Her kids brag on this mother. When her daughter grows up, she wants to be like mom. When her sons grow up, they want to marry women like their mom. And to top it all off, she's all her husband can talk about. Her husband also, and he praises her. Many daughters have done well, but you excel them all. I mean, the guys at work get tired of hearing about this wonderful wife. Verse 30, charm is deceitful and beauty is passing, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. Her complexion will weather, her skin will sag, her hands will wrinkle, but she'll never lose her beauty, for her attractiveness is on the inside. She will be gorgeous for time and eternity. Always remember, a pretty shell doesn't necessarily make for a tasty nut. It's what's on the inside that counts. Nobody treasures a gift because of the pretty wrapping paper. We value what's on the inside. And then the last verse. Give her of the fruit of her hands and let her own works praise her in the gates. Here's a final word to husbands. Men, if you are married to a virtuous woman, or at least a woman who aspires to be, never take her for granted. For she is more valuable than rubies. Pamper her. Praise her. Respect her in front of the kids. Brag on her to your buddies. Most of all, love her with all of your heart. For that, gentlemen, is great wisdom.
The wisdom of the Proverbs transcends generations. Each phrase is as true today as it was when it was written centuries ago. God spoke through incredible truth through the pens of his authors throughout the Bible. But the book of Proverbs captures these wise adages in easy-to-follow, common-sense statements. As you continue to study this Old Testament book here with us on Sandy Adams Radio, We encourage you to apply what you learn in your own interactions with others. What we are learning is what God desires each person's life to embody. If you'd like to listen to more of Pastor Sandy's teachings in Proverbs or explore other teaching series from the Word of God, you can do so at sandyadams.org. Download the mobile app there as well to take these Bible teachings with you wherever you go. This website also contains links to our Twitter and Facebook pages where we'd love to connect with you and have you join in the conversations you'll find there. Also at sandyadams.org, you can learn more about Pastor Sandy, read some of his informative articles, and find a store with some books he's authored. These are great reads for new believers and veterans of the faith alike. All of this and so much more is found at sandyadams.org. That's all we have time for today. Join Pastor Sandy next time for more from his verse-by-verse study of the book of Proverbs right here on Sandy Adams Radio.